important. I want you to do that, and I know you will. Most important vote in the history of this country. Hey, thanks so much for being with us today.
This is the Quality News Network. In southern Lebanon, today is the second day of the UN ceasefire. Israeli forces have begun their withdrawal. Overnight, Hezbollah guerrillas fired 10 rockets. However, they did not land in Israel. In two separate incidents, five Hezbollah gunmen were shot by Israeli soldiers. In northern Israel, residents emerged from bomb shelters, while in southern Lebanon, long lines of cars continued to stream back into the area. In London, British police have detained the 25th suspect in the alleged plot to blow up jet planes over the Atlantic Ocean. It's the first arrest in the case. The 23 other suspects are still in custody. One was released. The Washington Post reports that millions of dollars from Britain for Pakistani earthquake relief were transferred to the terrorist plot. Officials say less than half of the $10 million for the charity was actually used for relief operations. British air carriers estimate they have lost a total of $570 million since the terrorist plot was unveiled last Thursday. There have been hundreds of canceled and delayed flights at airports around Britain. In the northern city of Mosul, Iraq, nine people were killed after a suicide bomber blew up a truck outside of the headquarters of the Iraqi president's political party. The blast injured 41 people. In the southern city of Karbala, a gun battle between Shiite gunmen and the Iraqi police left six people dead. In the Gaza Strip, Palestinian security forces have joined in the search for two Fox News journalists who were abducted from their vehicle by gunmen yesterday. In South Korea, officials say they're prepared to help North Korea if the country returns to six-party nuclear talks. North Korea insists it will not go back to the negotiating table until Washington lifts its financial restrictions. In the eastern Indian Ocean, a Japanese oil tanker collided with a cargo ship. 1.4 million gallons of crude oil spilled. In Ohio, terror charges have been dropped against two Michigan men who were arrested after purchasing a large amount of disposable cell phones in recent months. The two men also had airplane passenger lists and information about airport security checklists in their car. However, prosecutors say they couldn't prove a link to terrorism existed. A Mississippi judge has ruled that a couple cannot collect damages from their insurance company for flood damage after Hurricane Katrina because it was not included in their policy. If the couple had won, it would have set a precedent for hundreds of others whose homes were damaged in last year's hurricane. The insurance industry has denied billions of dollars worth of claims. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is coming up next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
A new Census Bureau report shows that immigrants, both legal and illegal, now make up 12.4% of the U.S. population. Hispanics are the nation's largest minority group. Additionally, whites are now a minority in four states: California, Texas, New Mexico, and Hawaii. Across the U.S., lower home sales are now reported in 28 states. The National Association of Realtors says that the second quarter sales were down nationally by 7%. The National Association of Home Builders indicates that U.S. home homebuilder optimism fell to its lowest level in 15 years. This comes as inventories of unsold homes are growing and the number of home buyers is decreasing. Dell is recalling 4.1 million batteries for their laptop computers because they can overheat and burst into flames. The lithium batteries are made by Sony. The Labor Department reports that in July, overall wholesale prices went up by 0.1%. For the first time in a decade, Walmart had its first profit decline. The world's largest retailer suffered losses by selling its stores in Germany to a rival. New York City's Mayor Michael Bloomberg is giving $125 million of his own money for a new worldwide anti-smoking campaign. Light sweet crude settled at $73.05 a barrel today. And near the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 132 points. The NASDAQ is up 57 points. The S&P 500 is up 19. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Bramoff.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
Monday warrior, mean strike. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean strike.
It's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' games, it's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce Birch.
All right, welcome once again to the Bruce Birch Radio Program. It's a little after 6 minutes past the hour, and we'll do the normal thing today. Just going to take a look at some of the stories that are going on. On my blog, I posted a show post that with the title, "The Only Thing to Fear is Fearmongers." Well, you know who the fearmongers are out there, don't you? That's right, George and company, they're out in full force trying to impress upon you that you should be scared to death of terrorism. Well, okay, I know I should be scared, but why, George? Why should I be scared of terrorism? After all, the chances are that I'll probably die in a car wreck before I get blown up by a bomb. Chances are that I'll probably perhaps even die in a plane crash because of a faulty mechanical part before I get killed in a terrorist attack. Chances are I might die of pneumonia. Actually, ladies and gentlemen, the chances are you probably will die of old age before you will ever die as a result of the actions of a terrorist. So, if I'm not scared, or if you're a cigarette smoker, you know, that could also be the case as well. But, if the chances are that I will die by the, by some other calamity, why should I be, if I'm not scared of driving a car, let's look at this for a moment. If I'm not scared of driving a car, and I'm not scared of flying in an airplane, and I'm not scared to have a cigar occasionally, why the hell would I be scared about terrorism? Well, the answer is obviously you shouldn't be. You know, what you should be scared about is a foreign policy that is creating more terrorists than we can kill. A foreign policy that kept the leaders of our country from trying to intervene in a positive way in the Israeli conflict over there, the Lebanon bombardment, because they want to remake the Middle East to be in their image, and they see that as the fulfilling of perhaps a prophecy, biblical prophecy, as you heard earlier today. I think our good friend Dr. Bill O'Brien, I had the wonderful opportunity to tune into his show today, and I am so impressed with that guy. He is just amazing. You know, and then the guys that follow him, Mark Levine and Guy James, they rock right on, man. They carry on the progressive tradition of radio. And it's just absolutely, you know, we have some great programming here on the Horn. If you are not aware of all the shows, you've got to tune in and check them out. Dr. Bill O'Brien is a retired history professor, taught college university classes for many, many years. Incredible historical perspective on today's events. Today, I think his show was about the separation of church and state, and he pulled stuff out of the hat that I had never heard of before. I was like, whoa, this is great. Mark Levine, former constitutional lawyer. Now, this guy knows his stuff. He has a TV show up in D.C. He has a show here daily on the Head On Radio Network, 2 to 3. Check him out. Guy James, dyed-in-the-wool liberal from Florida. Fantastic radio host. You heard him just a few minutes ago coming into my show. I really appreciate Guy. He does a great job, and I really appreciate his show. He has a way of presenting things that, again, is bar none. And then me, you know, I'm the weak link. I'm the weak link in the chain of the Head On Radio Network. No, probably not. I don't think we have any weak links. But you know, then after me is our good friend Bob Kincaid. I understand he probably will be live tonight. So it, you know, fantastic. We're gonna do some really neat stuff this week. So, you know, you get a chance, check out that stuff. Check out our archives as well. You can go to headonradionetwork.com. And if you go to headonradionetwork.com, you can avail yourself of our entire online experience. We've got a chat room. We've got forums. We have blogs. We have podcasting. We have archives. You name it, it's there. I want to make this venture as readily accessible and available to any process. We want you to be listeners. And those of you who are now, thank you. Availing yourself perhaps of the other side of the political talk conversation paradigm. Now, I was talking about fear, and something that I have been watching over the last 6 years, ever since Chimpy got elected, is the fact that they try to use fear. They try to use the appeal to a base survival instinct in people to retain power. In other words, they don't have principles really to present. Although the American Family Association or whatever the hell they are, you know, the James Dobsons and the all those guys, you know, they think that they have the corner on your salvation, and therefore, you know, you need to vote for George Bush to ensure it. But the reality is, they really don't have anything to offer the average American. Why don't they have anything to offer? The Republican Party has. This is the situation. I'm going to lay it out there in a nutshell for you. The Republican Party has isolated itself away from the average American through actions such as the bankruptcy bill. It's isolated itself away from the average American through actions, you know, 60%. The Republican Party has isolated itself away from the average American by not increasing the minimum wage. You know, I think they did recently, or they were thinking about it, or they voted on it, but it had to be attached to a bill that would also give the upper echelon a huge tax break. So whatever the minimum wage was, you know, gained for poor people, it also gained billions, not millions, billions for the upper class, for those who, who are making millions every year already. The Republican Party has isolated itself away from the working people of America. Now, again, our friend Steady in the chat room reminds me they also tried to privatize the Social Security Trust. They absolutely did. And you know what? They're still going to try. I don't think that they're not done yet trying on that. You know, I've been looking at that situation too, and they govern one of two ways. They govern one of two ways. And that is this. They either do it overtly in your face, trying to change things, or they do it sort of underhandedly. Off to the side, they will make little changes to this regulation or that regulation. You know, the individual departments in the government will do little changes within to try to make it harder, for instance, for people to get food stamps, or make it harder, for instance, for women and single families to get aid to families with dependent children. Or the Medicare Part D, Medicare Part D, which made required people to privatize their drug benefit that they get, you know, when they're older. All of these things are designed to benefit the very rich. They're designed to benefit the very powered, those who already have it made in America. They're not designed to help you and me, ladies and gentlemen. So how can they get the rest of us to vote for them? Well, we'll talk about that. We're going to take a quick break. It's 16 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a quick break, first break of this show for today, and we will come back. And I'm also being reminded Bill is not retired yet. Our friend Bill, Dr. Bill O'Brien, he's not retired yet. So he's still working. He's still professing. I'm glad he is. Changing young minds. That's the way it needs to work. You listen to the Bruce Burch radio program on the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
Must be the ones who start to mold a new reality closer to the heart. Closer to the heart.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided they can't be, that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Burch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here is some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark CFV.org for free loan open caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hi, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, forward it to phishing@irs.gov. That's phishing at irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. Thank you.
Back on the Bruce Birch radio program. Glad to be back with you. Now, you know, when I went over to the break, and I think that Allman Brothers song, man, every time I hear it, it's so apropos. You know, if you were to apply those lyrics to the current Bush administration, oh my goodness. It took all my money, stole my brand new car, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, very apropos. Now, as I was saying earlier, what is it? And the question is, how has the Bush administration and how has the Republican Party swayed so many voters into voting for them? Now, of course, as I covered on the show a couple weeks ago, I think I had a show where we talked about how those in power retain power and how the voting machines themselves are a little suspect. Well, that's an understatement, isn't it? How the voting machine manufacturers have your vote up for sale in the privatization, again, more privatization, the privatization of democracy in the United States. How, even beyond all that, even beyond knowing that Ohio was basically a rigged election and Florida also was a rigged election, knowing all those things, how does the Bush administration and how does the Republican Party continue to sway these undecided voters over to their side? And I'm going to tell you exactly how. They do it by appealing to the base survival instinct. I remember back in 2004, I was on the phone yesterday with Dave from Eureka, and we were talking about what happened in 2004, and they came up with this. Even the media is complicit with this. They came up with this thing called security moms. And these security moms, they were worried about terrorism. They were worried about being killed by those dirty Arabs, those raghead-wearing people, right? They were worried about someone coming over here and killing them because they love freedom. Well, let me just tell you, that's not why they dislike us. They dislike us because we try to force our will upon them at the end of a gun. They dislike us because we're trying to change hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, of culture that they live in, and force them into our way of living. We're trying to force them into our style of government. We're trying to force them to live like we do because we love freedom, right? Cheerily, I say. Well, it's crazy. If, let's just use this as an example, okay? And actually, I'll get to the phones here very shortly. If you're on hold, please hang on. Let's use this as an example. Let's use, the American Revolution, okay? The American Revolution happened because there were people who were tired of being oppressed, meaning they were sat on and told what to do and told how to act and told how much money to give and what church to go to. They were tired of being oppressed, and they, you know, and a great many of them traveled here to the United States to what was then just a plain old landmass, Turtle Island. And, of course, they massacred the Indians. Well, we're not going to talk about that on this show. We'll do that at another time. But they came to this country, and they decided that they wanted to set up a different kind of society. They were tired of being taxed to death. They were tired of the oppressive rule of England. And England, of course, was at its heyday. England was you know, had various territories and outposts and colonies all over the world. And the American Revolution happened. There was a Declaration of Independence. And that declaration basically ensured that, yes, those people who started this country were, number one, traitors to the crown, and number two, you know, they basically had a death sentence placed upon their heads. And when that happened, of course, they were seen as insurgents. They were seen as those terrorists over there in America. You know, we didn't fight like the British did. A great many of us, we hid in the trees and we shot from behind the blinds, and we took these redcoats out because we believed in one thing, and that was freedom. Freedom then and freedom now, I would like to posit to you, are two very vastly different things. Freedom in the United States now means that you are free to be subject to warrantless illegal wiretapping of your telephone calls and emails, your web traffic. Freedom means that you are required to pay taxes whether you like it or not. Freedom means today that if you are prominent enough and you stand on the wrong side of the issue, automatically you're called a terrorist. That's what freedom means today. Very, very vastly different situation than what it was originally intended to be. And these people in the Bush administration today want you to believe that unless you are a conservative, unless you believe in the entire remaking of the Middle East in the vision of the neocon fascist bastards over at the newamericancentury.org, that unless you believe in those principles, you are also a terrorist. You're a defeatist, as Guy James said earlier, defeatocrat, that's what they call you. Instead of looking at things with common sense and saying to yourself, you know, this doesn't make sense to me. How can I, as an American citizen, want, you know, if I believe truly in freedom, then this could, you know, those folks should have the opportunity to have whatever kind of government they want, right? Wrong. They've got to love freedom too, and by God, they'll either love it or we'll kill them to make them. that seems to be the rule of the day. It seems to be the rule of the day. Now, you know, of course, John Ball Getty was quoted as saying, "The meek shall inherit the earth, but not the mineral rights." Right. Anyway, my point being with this is that the Republican Party wants you to believe that you have to be scared, and they have to be able to protect you. That's their job. They think that, you know, they're very authoritative. They're very. It's all about looking over the flock, because the flock can't look over itself. The flock can't make its own decisions and rely upon those decisions The flock can't have a true democracy, because having a true democracy where all the votes are counted and where everyone has input, that means that, we can't take care of you if you do that. We can't take care of you if you vote us out of office. So we're just going to go ahead and take over for a while and try to reshape this country into a, you know, the imperialist, the autocratic, the aristocratic society that John Adams and Alexander Hamilton originally envisioned. That's what we need to do. That's the kind of society we need to have. And you little people over there working and cleaning up after me, you know, what you need to do is be very scared, because if not, then I won't protect you. I won't take care of you. Is that what it's boiled down to? Is that where we've come to, ladies and gentlemen? Are you scared? Are you scared of being killed in a terrorist attack? Are our soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan right now protecting freedom? Are they actually protecting freedom? I don't think so. I've looked at this and twisted it and turned it and said, how can they justify these folks being over there? I can't see it. I can't see it. What I do see is our troops being used in an imperialist move. And imperialist, you know, it sounds very catchy, and, you know, it's one of those things that you'll hear from wide-eyed radicals. But, you know, it's one of those moves. It's a colonization. And every day, more and more people die over there. And every day, it moves closer to the brink of civil war if it isn't already there. While we stand back and say, well, we're protecting freedom. We're not protecting freedom. And I don't hold the boys and girls over there who are in uniform responsible. They're doing as they're told. That's their job. I am holding those people who are in the forefront of the administration responsible, because they have misused our military. And they're trying to make you scared so that you vote for them one more time. Don't do it. Don't be scared. I'm going to take a break, and when I come back, we'll hit the phone lines. This is Bruce Birch. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. So now it turns out that the Israeli war on Lebanon was very much an American-Israeli war on Lebanon. Not only did the Bush administration stall for time on any ceasefire, it actually goosed Israel into invading in the first place. This according to Seymour Hersh in The New Yorker. Hersh cites two reasons, and both relate to Bush's obsessive interest in attacking Iran. Bush is a warholic. Even after the bender that is Iraq, he wants to go out and get another case. He was in favor of Israel attacking Hezbollah as a way to demonstrate how to go after hardened bunkers in Tehran, Hersh reports. And second, Bush was in favor because he thought it would neutralize one of the negative countermoves that might happen if and when the U.S. does attack Iran. The Pentagon's been running war games on Iran, if you can call them that. And one thing that always pops up is the likelihood of Hezbollah retaliating on behalf of Iran by lobbing rockets into Israel. So why not get rid of those rockets first? Seen through Bush's and Cheney's eyes, the Israeli attack then was both a trial run and a preemptive strike. They didn't bother about a little thing like casualties. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America.
You're back on the Bruce Birch radio program, Radio for a Freer America, and our good friend Steady in the chat room. He's hanging out in there. He typed some things up in there that I wanted to share with you. I found it to be very funny, or at least enlightening to a certain degree. He says, and I will read this in my best preacher man voice. A sovereign God, most high, creator of heaven and earth, creates man in his own image. Man, being created in the image of the Most High God, is also sovereign. He has been given dominion and stewardship of all the earth. Man, in his effort to find happiness, comes to this country and takes whatever he sees and creates a constitution to protect his newfound wealth. This constitution, created by this man, created by this Most High God, operates in its greatest creative opportunity and protects the rights and general welfare of this man, who is also a sovereign creation of the Most High God. This protecting force is formulated and designed to check and balance itself in a republic for which our flag stands, form of government. Government, in its greatest creative opportunity, protects the general welfare of the people it serves. Then, in the interest of business and protecting the people, government creates corporations. Corporations create all kinds of wonderful things. New, refreshing ideas are birthed through this new corporation creation. And so the story is started. That's our good friend, Steady. That's what he calls the gospel according to Steady Love. Thank you, Steady, for sharing that with us. Fantastic. All right, let's go over to the phones. Our good friend Jim is joining us on line one. How are you doing today, Jim? Good to hear from you.
Good afternoon. How are you, sir?
I am doing. I'm doing okay. I'm doing okay. Right. It's a good day.
I think you're going to have to send me a copy of the Rosetta Stone to interpret the comments of that last person who entered that on your chat in your chat room. I'm not sure I understand that quite to my satisfaction, but that seems a fish to foul. Okay.
Okay.
You know, as far as the American Revolution is concerned, it might interest you to know that over 100,000 people left this country after we won that revolution from Great Britain. And King George III, of course, was the first Hanoverian king to speak English. His grandfather and father didn't. And basically, all the British were trying to do was to get us to pay for the French and Indian War, because all the laws that we so vehemently protested had been on the books at 1720, the Molasses Act and all those other acts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it can be looked at two ways. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I guess what I'm trying to tell you is that if I've been living back in those days, that's part of what my family was. Not, they were loyalists.
Okay.
And part of them left and told this country to go to hell. Because basically what they inherited, the ones who remained, and the British freed a lot of the slaves. That was the condition of fighting for the British, was to receive an act of manumission, or they were freeing the slaves. And, of course, we didn't free our slaves until 1860, and it took a war to do that. And even after the Russians had liberated their first in 1861. So, you know, American history has been told and retold with different slants, and I think it's good to look at both sides of it.
Well, I definitely appreciate that. I know that
personally, I cannot envision England without the royal family or the Queen. And I'm an ardent royalist.
Okay,
that's just my position there. Okay.
Well, that's fine, and that's fine and that's fine for England. I'm not
a bad idea for here. Tell you the truth, considering what we've had. But you know, Bruce, I want you to consider, what is the function of government? What do you think it really is?
I think it exists to serve the general welfare of the people.
No, not at all. The purpose of government, as really practiced, is to keep people in line, to maintain order. That is the real purpose of government. You just outlined those things yourself earlier in your opening remarks. Did you not?
Well, you know, Jim, I don't think that's the real purpose of government, though.
Well, I don't care, but that's what it is in reality.
Okay.
Theories are fine. However, in reality, the purpose of government is to keep people in line, and they do this through the methods in which you yourself delineated earlier. And what do you think the principal mobilizing force in the society that it keeps in order happens to be?
Fear, perhaps.
War. That is the principal organizing element in society, is war. Now, attendant with that is fear and the other things that you mentioned. And you have at the top the political people who control the career civil service people, and the career service people have to do what they're told and say yes, sir, and snap to, and below them you have the military. And the career service people and the military have to do what the politicians formulate. In other words, if they formulate something that is unthinkable, they will get the military and the career civil service to do it for them. And that's the way it's been. And thus is, in my opinion, the politics of reality. And that's where we are today.
Yeah, I don't know that I like it.
I'm not trying to get you to like it, and I'm not giving it to you as any type of sugar-coated pill. But I think I'm just trying to share my view, and I'm not saying that that's necessarily infallible. But I think it's pretty much on the mark that the purpose of government is to keep people in line.
That's what I'm saying, and that's part of what we need to do is I believe what part of what we need to do is try to change some of that.
Well, I don't think you can. I don't think that's possible because people have to be kept in line.
Well, then why should we bother doing anything?
What you might consider as a necessary evil, I consider a positive good, because the alternative to government is total anarchy, and I don't think you'd want that either.
No. I think there's a...
Do you follow my reasoning here?
I think we have yeah, I do. I think we have a very, you know, that if our government functioned the way it was originally intended to function, it would actually work very well.
Well, you had a lot of people who weren't really satisfied with the Constitution when they left. None of them were really satisfied with it. I mean, you had the Connecticut Compromise. You had the different people who contributed to the articles, the first three articles of the Constitution. And then the remaining four, I think there's seven, and then added to those are how many amendments to try to keep the thing going, to keep it up to date. But, you know, it's lasted 200 years, plus years. And but still, when you look at it, and you look at the history of the function of government, which ideally should be to do for ourselves collectively that which we cannot do for ourselves individually. That is one of its functions. However, when you get to the bottom line and you boil it all down and you strip away all the skin, you get down to the bare bones, the purpose of that skeleton is to maintain order and to keep society in line. And it does that. And it really has to. And unfortunately, it creates what I consider to be, in the civil service and in the military, a moral vacuum. Because some of the stuff they're told to do is not moral. Government is not moral, Bruce. Government is amoral in reality.
Okay.
People do not do things out of the absolute goodness of their heart, do they?
Many do, yes.
As government is concerned. That is not, it's nice if that should happen, if it happens to benefit somebody, but there's always some ulterior motive there. And, you know, for example, Bismarck in Germany created Social Security. Why do you think he did that? And he created a lot of good things for the working people. Why do you think he did that?
For political reasons, I'm sure.
To keep, to cover his ass. He didn't want those red Bolsheviks and the syndicalists and the radicals overthrowing the Kaiser and Wilhelm in Germany. And, you know, these programs were designed to basically keep the working man in a position where he had a degree of assurance, and he said the socialists would sing their bird calls in vain. As a matter of fact, Churchill was so impressed with the German system of taking care of people that he wanted to institute it in Britain, because all they had there was the workhouse. So I'm just, you know, we got to, in order to look at something, you've got to look at it head on without any type of blinders on, in my opinion. And you can't do La Vie en Rose of the world through rose-colored glasses. That's my only intention in making these statements this afternoon. And I hope that they are moderately received.
Absolutely. Everybody's, you know, we all have our viewpoints, Jim.
But I can assure you mine is very realistic and born of years of experience. I can assure you.
Okay. Appreciate your calling today.
Hey, out here.
Okay, thanks a lot, man. That's our friend Jim, who lives somewhere in an undisclosed location for reasons of let's see, I don't know, for some reasons. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hit the phones again. You're listening to the Bruce Birch radio program on the Head On Radio Network, where, we do have a large smattering of idealism. I'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fix stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Clean up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed.
And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Listen, man, adding fractions is no big deal.
Nah?
Nah. You just got to find what they call the common denominator. Let me show you.
All right.
Now, see these bottom numbers?
Yeah.
These are the denominators. That one's a 4, and that one's an 8.
Mm-hmm.
You just double both of these numbers, so that becomes an 8, too. Then you add them up.
Man, you sure make this easy.
Charles Bennett always dreamed that after college he'd return to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without the money for tuition, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Oh, sure.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. Call 1-800-332-UNCF. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program where we try to have a little bit of idealism here in the on the show. You know, my good friend Jim, I was thinking about it over the break, and I, you know, we all have our perspectives about the role of government, and I think that's what makes this nation what it is. You know, my view is less government intrusion and more government services for the people. His view, well, you heard his view, and we all have our views, and that's what makes this, not only this radio show what it is, it also makes this nation what it is. Let's go right back to the phones and see if we can take a quick call before the top of the hour. Our friend Bob from North Dakota is on line two. Bob, how are you doing today, man?
Hello. How are you doing?
Top of the day to you, mate. I'm doing great.
I don't think so. I got I got a quote from a great general, okay?
Okay.
One of our most foremost ones, not way back with George and the boys back there in 1776. We're talking about right here, right now, everybody remembers it, okay? And
okay.
This is a shout out to my friend down there in Panama, Rick. To you,
okay.
Come on back, okay? And to everybody, know, hey, that I am not dead yet.
Okay.
Okay? Okay. Tomorrow or the next day or whenever Bush comes to drag me off to the death camp. But listen to this, okay? Bovine scatapple. You know what bovine scatapple is?
I can imagine, yes.
No, bovine scatapple. Just think about it. BS, okay?
Yes.
Everybody talks about all the BS that we keep hearing about how everything was so wonderful back in the 1880s and the 1860s and the 1850s and 1840s. In fact, back there when we heard all about the Russian Revolution and all that stuff from our good friend. He knows everything about everything. He's going to tell everybody about everything. Well, I'm going to tell him something about something. This ain't the 1880s, it ain't the 1860s, it ain't in the 50s or 40s or 30s or back there when you could have black men doing your bidding, boy. Period. You talk, oh God, you talk. And you come in here and you tell everybody on Head On Network how we should think? I'm sick of you. I really am. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of him telling us how we should act like we're back in something like the George W.
Well, I think
Bush.
Bob, I got to tell you, on the one hand, we all have something to contribute. So, I don't want to get off into name calling or anything like that.
I'm trying to run him off. I just wanted to kind of tone it down a bit and think about we're not living in that era anymore. It's like history, okay? And it's something you read about in the funny books or the history books. Or, you go back and try to figure out where Atlantis is. Hey, Jim, tell me where Atlantis is, please. You know everything about everything. Tell me where it's at, please. See, I'm sick of it, Bruce. And
I understand.
I'm sick of listening to these right-wingers come in here and tell everybody how we should think. I really am.
I don't think Jim's a right winger, and I think on the left side of the political spectrum, there's plenty of room for all of us. It's just a matter of understanding that part of what we need to do differently, I'm not directing this at anyone in particular, but that we need to be very aware of being respectful of others and trying to honor each one of us who has ideas, because just because it's an idea doesn't necessarily mean that it's a good or bad idea. It's an idea, and it's something that we should, take a look at. If it's good, we'll use it. If not,
oops.
So,
I
do appreciate, sharing that with us. I think.
Okay, that's fine.
That we may hear. this is turning into an interesting show today.
Well, hey, Bruce.
Yes, sir. Sergeant.
Well, it works for me. And hey, the thing is, I played a trick. I just tried to find out how close I could get to my friend Pamela Rick, okay? And I played a trick just to see if I could do it like you did. And I did, and I got myself there. But it's my own doing, and I'm banned, and I'm not allowed. But I'd be sick and talk to you, and I want to tell you. Okay, I can sit here and pontificate all night long. You know that. I can sit here and talk like I have all the answers. None of us do, son. Not one of us. Not one of us know the answers. The only thing we know is if we care about each other, and I care about you. I care about you. I really do. And I'm sorry to say, but this will be Sonny Bob's last call.
No need for that, man. Don't do that. But because I appreciate your input, Bob.
I'm not God Almighty, and I'm not George W. Bush. What I am is an old gray hair sitting here listening to people tell me how I should have lived or how I could have lived if I'd only been with them and done whatever they said. But hey, it don't matter what happened 20 years ago or 30 years ago or 40 years ago or 50 years ago. It doesn't matter. What matters right now, right here, today, is what we do about this mess we're in. And the only thing we can do is stop it. If you're going to fight, hey, for whatever, Queen Victoria or George the First or George the Second. I don't care what you're going to do, but think about your children and what you want them to think about you. And my children think Grandpa, or as you call him, Gunny Bob, don't take nothing from nobody, but he gives and gives and gives. And I give my love, my respect. I do not tell them how to think. I just ask them, first, think about what you're doing. And when you start telling people how they should be, and you should be like, I don't know, some Russian czar, or some, I don't know, some king in England, I tell them, hey, just be yourself and do not expect others to be you, period. Don't think that they think like you or act like you or will be you. Just, you know, if they're black, hey, they're men too. If they're Arab, they're men too. If they're Jewish, they're also men. And
yeah.
The thing is, you have to respect the man, not the religion. You can respect the man just because he is. You don't have to tell him how he should be. No, Bruce, I have to tell you.
Bob, I'm going to have to cut it short because I've got the news coming up in about 25 seconds, okay? So I really appreciate you calling today, and we'll definitely pick this.
Hey, just,
call me again. Call me. Don't say you won't call me again.
Last. This is it. Bye.
All right. Well, call me again. That's our good friend Bob from North Dakota. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back after the news and go back to your phone calls.
Quality News Network. In southern Lebanon, today is the second day of the UN ceasefire. Israeli forces have begun their withdrawal, which is expected to take about 10 days, according to Israel's Army Chief of Staff. Overnight, Hezbollah guerrillas fired 10 rockets. However, they did not land in Israel. In two separate incidents, five Hezbollah gunmen were shot by Israeli soldiers. In northern Israel, residents emerged from bomb shelters, while in southern Lebanon, long lines of cars continued to stream back into the area. Outside of Washington today at the National Counterterrorism Center, President Bush said the U.S. is safer than it has been, but not yet safe. He added that America could be fighting terrorists for years to come. Meanwhile, Iran and Syria declared that the Hezbollah guerrillas won the fight with Israel. They added that America's plan for a new Middle East has been thwarted. The Iraqi Health Ministry reports that in July, an average of 110 Iraqis were killed per day. Overall, at least 3,438 civilians were killed in violence, making July the deadliest month in Iraq so far. In the northern city of Mosul, 9 people were killed today after a suicide bomber blew up a truck outside of the headquarters of the Iraqi president's political party. The blast injured 41 people. In their southern city of Karbala, a gun battle between Shiite gunmen and the Iraqi police left 6 people dead. In the Gaza Strip, Palestinian security forces have joined in the search for 2 Fox News journalists who were abducted from their vehicle by gunmen yesterday. One of the kidnapped victims is an American reporter. The other is a New Zealand cameraman. In Pakistan, 27 Taliban fighters were arrested by authorities in a private hospital. All of them were Afghans. Some of the Taliban fighters had been wounded battling NATO forces in Afghanistan. In London, British police have detained the 25th suspect in the alleged plot to blow up jet planes over the Atlantic Ocean. It's the first arrest since the plot was foiled last Thursday. The 23 other suspects are still in custody. One has been released. British air carriers estimate that they have lost a total of $570 million since the terrorist plot was unveiled. There have been hundreds of canceled and delayed flights at airports around Britain. In Ohio, terror charges have been dropped against the 2 Michigan men who were arrested after purchasing a large amount of disposable cell phones in recent months. Prosecutors say they couldn't prove a link to terrorism existed. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
A Mississippi judge has ruled that a couple cannot collect damages from their insurance company for flood damage after Hurricane Katrina because it was not included in their policy. The Labor Department reports that in July, overall wholesale prices went up by 0.1%. The National Association of Home Builders indicates that U.S. home builder optimism fell to its lowest level in 15 years. Across the U.S., lower home sales are now reported in 28 states. There were big drops in California, Florida, and Arizona, which were former boom areas, according to the National Association of Realtors. For the first time in a decade, Walmart had the first profit decline. The world's largest retailer suffered losses by selling its stores in Germany to a rival. U.S. sales were also disappointing. Home Depot reports a 5.3% increase in second quarter earnings, fueled by a strong rise in sales. 3M has announced a $1 billion stock buyback plan. The company will use the money for corporate purposes, including employee compensation plans. Dell is recalling 4.1 million batteries for their laptop computers because they can overheat and burst into flames. In the eastern Indian Ocean, a Japanese oil tanker collided with a cargo ship. 1.4 million gallons of crude oil spilled. Light sweet crude settled at $73.05 a barrel today, and at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 132 points, the Nasdaq up 57, and the S&P 500 up 18. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Ali Dramoff.
It's time for another hour of conversation radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch Radio Program, and on for another hour. Now, if you want to get in on the show, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. That'll get you into the Head On Radio Network studios in wild, wonderful West Virginia. Zach will get you on the show with me. If you'd like to email me, you can also do that. Bruce@brucebirch.com will get you into my email box. And I always appreciate your emails. All right, let's go right back to the phones. Our good friend Rama from Vermont is on line three. Rama, how are you doing, man?
Doing good. How are you doing, Bruce? By the way,
well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was just saying, inviting me to get into your email box sounds a little suggestive, don't you think?
Well, it depends on what you're going to do in there.
Oh gosh, now it's getting worse. way back we had a first president. His name was George Washington. And as far as I can tell, history has it that George was offered basically the kingship of the new United States of America, and he turned it down. In a fairly unprecedented move, actually. He turned it down, not because he was afraid of being a king, but because he thought it was the wrong thing to do, and that, you know, he wanted to continue with that promise of an elected government, as imperfect as the elections were in those days. In the 20th century, we saw the rise of democratically based governments that were truly controlled democratically, at least, by the masses, by the poor people, the unread as well as the red, the rich and the poor, the white and the black, the male and the female, the old and the young, landowners and the renters, et cetera. And, you know, it would be a shame for us to turn back now and to say, gee, you know, all of this really doesn't work, and that we really need to return back to the days of lords and kings, and we need to accept a government whose major function is to keep us all in line so that we don't get disorderly. And I say that I was...
Doesn't sound like much of a choice, Rama, does it?
No, and it's a ridiculous statement to make. And I called up because your caller, two callers ago, and you know, and it's not a personal thing about the caller. It's about the ideas expressed. And you know, there is such a promise for the future. Ow, I'm getting chewed on by a puppy with puppy teeth. There is such a promise for the future if we keep moving ahead and we keep insisting on the right thing. Like you say, you know, a government whose primary function is to tend to the general welfare of the people. You know, if you look in our United States Constitution, in the preamble and also in I forget the article number, but the one where it talks about the Congress's responsibilities and authorities, and the term the general to look out for the general welfare is in both of those. You know, the government is formed to look out for the general welfare. That's stated in the preamble, and Congress can raise taxes for the general welfare of the people. That's the government that we ought to push for. And quite frankly, I don't care if people don't like that. I don't care if there's folks like the Bushes and a vast majority of the Republican politicians who think that, you know, keeping the rabble down is what is important in this world. It to me, it doesn't matter. I'm going to keep marching forward because I'm with you, Bruce. Idealism is a great thing, and you put idealism up there as a goal, and then you take practical steps to get there.
That's I would say precisely. You would say you just covered exactly what I believe in. I mean, Rama. I'm glad you called, and I'm glad that you brought this comment to the fore, because in my view, you know, we have in the last 6 years, and actually probably longer than that, strayed away from the original idealism that this country was founded upon, and that is, you know, of course, you know, we have to look at the folks who were involved in creating the Constitution, and it wasn't put together by people who were the renters. I mean, you know, it wasn't put together by people who we would call the working Americans today. But the reality is that they had a higher calling. I think that they looked at what they were about to embark upon, and they did. They argued about it and they fussed about it. They actually had to have two conventions to do it, you know.
Yeah.
And but when they were done, they had in their hands a tangible new idea, a tangible. They wove the realities and the idealism together and created a constitution that has served us well when we have served it. Now, and that is the biggest, in my view, the biggest problem that we have today. Is that this present administration has swayed so far away from that, or has strayed, I should say, so far away from the actual practical application of the Constitution. He and his cronies have decided that, you know, it's no longer applicable. Or as he said at one, according to the folks over at Capitol Hill Blue,
yeah.
You know, So today, so, you know, in my view, getting back to some of that idealism and moving, you know, all the progressive change that's happened in this country has happened through people who had progressive thought, who had idealism in mind. You know, so I appreciate your comment.
Yeah, well, just one last comment, and then I want to get out of the way and just listen. But I guess the point I would disagree with you, I think. And just from what I heard you saying there, and I, you know, but I think I disagree with you on that. It's not just the Bush administration, which has taken us in this path, in my view. I mean, the government has tended to want to be, as Jim describes, that thing which keeps us in order and which keeps us all in line and keeps the rabble from getting too far out of line. And if you look at all the progressive changes that occurred throughout the late 19th and throughout the 20th century, they happened not because government stepped forward and said, this is what we should do, with a couple very rare exceptions, and Social Security being one of them. But it was because people stepped forward and demanded action from the government and said, look, we're going to hold you directly responsible. And that puts the onus on, you know, average Jane and John Doe. The onus is not on the politicians to do right by us. The onus is on us to make sure that they do the right thing that they're elected to do.
Well, let me ask you this, Rama. I totally agree with you, and you're absolutely right. And I guess there is that little part of me that wants to say that Bill Clinton did some good things during his tenure in office, and he did some good things, but he was probably the best Republican president we've had in a while. What motivates people for progressive change? What motivates people to want to go out and demand that of their government that you just mentioned?
Your neighbors, your family, your friends, your coworkers. It's the people. Zogby came out with a poll not too long ago, and it's one that, you know, I found it interesting, I guess, because it reaffirms something which I've believed has been shown in literature. Oh, the dogs are going to start barking here because the wife just showed up. But Zogby came out with a poll that showed that the 75% of the poll respondents said they trust their neighbors and their coworkers and their friends. 20-some-odd percent trusted the president. Less than that trusted Congress and the press, et cetera. So if you really want to know how to reach out and touch people and influence them, go out and have dinner with your neighbor. Go down the street and talk to your neighbor. Stop and have a lunchtime chat with your coworker, et cetera. You know, people believe each other when they're on a face-to-face basis. And that's really where it's got to come from. Because if you sit there and you wait for some benevolent government to make it all better, they're going to act in their own best self-interest. And government's best self-interest is to keep itself in power.
I could not have said it better, and I guess you probably heard me say that exactly those same words before. You know, it is about going next door and sharing something with your neighbor and trying to create a conversation, because we are so isolated. Rama, real quick, tell me for the listeners that are listening right now, tell us about what's going on with your show that you're doing on Sunday nights and how they can listen.
Oh, well, A, nothing anymore, and B, they can't anymore. Actually, to make the long story short, is it just got to be too much time and trouble to spend hours prepping for a show, and our hardware, our satellite system, it was just not up to snuff on keeping a reliable connection. So where Grace and I are talking about going back to something we had been doing, which was podcasting and doing shorts, issue-specific shorts. So it's Homebodies had its time, and we're going to let it go now. It's just it's just too much trouble for the time we got to put into it.
Well, I'm really sorry to hear that. So the new podcasting and that kind of thing, people can also, but there'll be something on your website about it.
Yeah. I mean, for a while, if people go to homebodies.ramabahama.net, I haven't updated it yet, but I'm going to just have a simple page at that location, which will, you know, just tell them what's going on and where they can go for more. But, you know, Bruce, I don't feel bad about it. There are so many people out there that have done little things that have been adding up to big things, and I am perfectly happy to be just an anonymous little cog in a huge wheel that's grinding on in a really good direction.
I like that. Well, Rama, I really appreciate your call.
Oh, yeah. You guys keep up the good work, too, because in general, I think Head On Radio Network does a really fantastic job, and you guys keep lugging away.
Well, we will keep doing it. We're gonna, you know, we have no plans to do anything else.
Good deal.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rama. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
that by now. That's our good friend Rama from Vermont. He used to do a show on Sunday nights called Rama and Grace Homebodies. And apparently they've decided to let it go. But if you want to check him out, you can go to Rama, or it's homebodies.ramabahama.net. All right, let's go ahead and take our quarter hour break. When we come back, we'll talk about some other things. This is Bruce Birch, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
This evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on the subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
So you catch on quick, I tell you. It's very quick, very quick. But I did want to just, because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I've had to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head On.
Some dreams are universal. Dreams that inspire us. Multiple sclerosis is a devastating disease that changes lives forever. The National MS Society does more for people with MS than any organization in the world. But we can't do it alone. To get involved, visit us online at nationalmssociety.org or call 1-800-FIGHT-MS. This is why we're here. Because nobody dreams of having multiple sclerosis.
Political conventions, talking of your crusade, talking of your nation, and other things too terrible to mention. And you proclaim your Christianity, you proclaim your love of God, you talk of apple pie and mine. I just got one question, and I want an answer. Tell me, who would Jesus bomb? Maybe Jesus would bomb the Syrians, because they're not Jews like him.
Okay, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 23 minutes past the hour. Wow, it's been an interesting show. It's woo, smoking. It's about 22 minutes past the hour. Now, you know, I really got to take a look at this for a moment, because perhaps my view of what government is and what it should be is not in keeping with what most people think. Now, Rama and I had a lot to agree on, and I think that the one area that was a perceived disagreement, which really wasn't, was excuse me, was how long this has gone back, and how far back this has happened. And, you know, and I got to tell you, you know, we have a responsibility. Each one of us has a responsibility. And I am one who very firmly believes, you know, the old adage, I think it was, Tip O'Neill, who said that all politics is local. Well, I absolutely believe that. And I think it boils down even more than that. I think that all politics is personal. Okay? And what I mean by that is that everything that, if you want to see positive change at a national level, now it'll take 20 years to get there. But if you want to see, or less, depending on how many people you have as a base to work with, but if you want to see political progressive change, then you have to sit down with people and talk to them about what's important to them. I just got an email. This is sort of off topic, or it, maybe it is on topic. There's a local group here called I'm not even going to name the group. It's irrelevant. There's a local political group here, and on this local political group, there is, you know, there are members of the group, and here in Greensboro, the anti-war movement is very fractured because there are a lot of folks who are very polarizing. Maybe that's the word, polarizing, and also very polarized. And, you know, as a result, they're all on the left, but they are so polarizing in their views that they can't get together to actually do decent actions. And it's kind of depressing. I mean, you look at it and you think, okay, but see, the point is that the point that I'm trying to make with this is that if we don't sit down and find our differences and find our similarities with each other, we'll never be able to make progressive change. Because I might be willing to compromise with you on an issue that is very near and dear to your heart, but that to me is not as important as another issue that is very near and dear to my heart. And the only way we'll be able to find these things out is if we sit down and have a realistic conversation about what we find to be important and what kind of change we envision to make these things happen. The interesting thing about today's program that I found is, you know, originally I started talking about fear and what and how the Republicans move people to vote by appealing to their base survival instinct using fear. That has evolved into an entirely different conversation about the function and the point of having government, which is fine. That's the wonder of conversation radio, because when you have conversations, and you know, this is just a perfect example of how that works. When you have these conversations, what happens is one person has something to add on top of what another person has to say. And eventually what you've come up with is sort of a collective consciousness of what people believe to be good and just and right and the way things should be. And, you know, that's fantastic. And that's the way we need to make change out in our society. See, now, you know, Head On Radio Network is broadcast via the Internet, and we have a chat room on our Internet, on our Internets. On one, you know, in one of those Internet tubes. You know, we have our show, and we have our chat room, and we have all these neat ways for people to interact with each other, but, you know, and I'm not telling you to get up and leave in the middle of my show now, mind you, or Bob's coming up later. But, you know, what I am saying is that face-to-face, as Rama said, that face-to-face contact, that face-to-face sitting down across the table from someone, breaking bread, sharing a meal, and saying, you know, I really think that, you know, whatever it is, you share the conversation with them. And you know what? You know, you'd be surprised at the kind of amazing stuff that can happen as a result, and the kinds of amazing relationships that are developed out of that kind of stuff. You know, I, for instance, last election cycle in 2004, I personally was a precinct chair here, G56 precinct in Guilford County, North Carolina. Okay. I printed up a bunch of flyers with my telephone number and email address, and I had a little website for our precinct and everything. And I went out and walked the precinct with my family. and we knocked on doors, and we shook people's hands. And, you know, we were able to contact a number of people who weren't even thinking about voting and thought twice about it. And I don't know that they voted. I don't know if they voted or not. I didn't do the follow-up to find out if any of these people voted. But I do know for sure that, you know, as a result of the efforts, I got to meet some really neat people and have developed several friendships as a result of doing that little precinct walk, going out and saying hello to my neighbors and talking to them and about, you know, making progressive change in the United States and how that can happen. You know, so there's any number of things that we can do to try to affect change, and it has to happen at a local level. And you know what? There is nothing that replaces putting your hand in someone else's hand, shaking it, and looking into them, looking dead into their eye, and telling them, you know, what you believe. I think that that is probably perhaps the most solid way of trying to make progressive change in this nation. And with that, we got to take another break because I ran over with our conversation with Rama. So, you know, think about that over the break. If you have some comments, give me a call, 1-877-443-2366. Bruce@BruceBurch.com is the email address. Head On Radio Network, that's the network. I'll be right back.
Did you hear him talking about it on the radio? Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Dick Cheney not only wants to be vice president, he wants to be secretary of state, too, and he's succeeding. What a relief it must be to him that Colin Powell's no longer over there, someone he couldn't muscle, though he could outmaneuver. But Rice he can handle. Lately, he's been browbeating her for being insufficiently supportive of Israel's war against Lebanon, this according to the New York Times. So if you want to know why the United States hasn't for weeks demanded an immediate ceasefire, it's because Cheney didn't want one. And he's infiltrated the upper reaches of the foreign policy establishment with his own people. John Bolton at the UN, a Cheney man. Elliot Abrams of the NSC, who travels with Rice to the Middle East, a Cheney man. Cheney's own views on Israel can be discerned from the guy he picked to run Middle East policy in his own office. David Wormser, who co-wrote the 1996 position paper for the Likud government entitled A Clean Break. Cheney himself echoed that phrase at an AIPAC conference back in March. It's Cheney and the neocons who are still running the show behind the scenes. Condoleezza Rice, kind of like Bush himself, is window dressing. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program. It's about 34 minutes past the hour, thereabouts, or something like that. Now, if you want to get in on the show today, you too can avail yourself of your free speech opportunity by dialing 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877, the number 4, head on. You could also send me an email, if you're so inclined, to jump into my email box, as Rama said he was going to. That would be bruce@brucebirch.com. I also have a blog site over at brucebirch.com. Now, you know, I'm going to move away from that particular topic area as far as the government thing. And the reason why I am is because I wanted to get in some other topics today. But, you know, I if you have ideas, if you have some thoughts on what you think government, how you think government should operate, or how we can, or what you believe we can do to affect progressive change, give me a call, okay? If you do that, we'll have a conversation about it right here on the Head On Radio Network. This is Conversation Radio. Now, interesting story today about the GOP and the fear-mongering that they do, the grand oil party, the greedy oil party, all, you know, those guys over there at the greedy oil party. Apparently now an ad produced by New York Senate hopeful John Spencer, who is of the greedy oil party, he pairs in his ad, a television spot, he pairs Hillary Clinton with none other, that's right, than Osama bin Laden. In the ad, which can be viewed online, Spencer pledges not to play politics with national security. Oh, my God. He pledges not to play politics with national security, and yet he places his opponent in the ad directly opposite Osama bin Laden with the caption reading, "But Hillary Clinton opposed the Patriot Act and NSA program that helped stop another 9/11. We're not going to play politics with national security. We're not going to try to fearmonger. We're not going to try to strike fear in the hearts of all of you people. But we are going to compare Hillary Clinton to being a collaborator with Osama bin Laden." Yeah. Yeah, we're not going to play politics with national security either, are we? Bull. The ad also seems to indicate that Clinton opposed programs that stopped a recent terror plot in London. Okay, it seems to indicate. They're trying to push you down the garden path, only to find out when you get to the end that, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. You know, the reality is, folks, the reality is that as long as they can push you into thinking something, you know, then they can pretend later, "Well, I didn't say that. Well, I didn't say, I didn't say that." And you, when you know damn good and well, that's exactly what they said. You know, and Bush, his recent use of the word Islamic fascists, you know, is, again, it's about trying to align what the Islamic world with Nazism. He's trying to get you to think, well, they're as bad as Hitler. We got to go kill them all. March, 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 march. Kill, kill, kill. Because we believe in freedom, right? Moving over to the bunny pants himself, U.S. Resident decider George W. Bush late yesterday reiterated earlier statements that he believes Iran and Syria are responsible for the conflict between Hezbollah and Israel. In a joint appearance with his vice resident decider, Dick Cheney, and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, Bush stated that the administration is now operating a war on terror on three fronts: Iraq, Afghanistan, and Lebanon. Now the war on terror has three fronts, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Lebanon. The president is hopeful that a UN Security Council resolution calling for international troops to help the Lebanese central government gain control of Hezbollah-dominated areas will take over this new front. He told reporters, quote, "We must help people in both Lebanon and Israel return to their homes and begin rebuilding their lives without fear of renewed violence and terror," end quote. Bush placed the blame for the violence first on Hezbollah. He is quoted as saying, "Hezbollah attacked Israel, and Hezbollah started the crisis, and Hezbollah suffered a defeat in this crisis." However, Bush also asserted... Am I doing a good job with that? However, Bush also asserted his belief that Hezbollah has been armed by Iran with weapons passing through Syria. He also told reporters, "I know they claim they didn't have anything to do with it, but sophisticated weaponry ended up in the hands of Hezbollah fighters, and many assume and many believe that the weaponry came from Iran through Syria." The United States and ally nations plan to call for UN troops to seal off Syrian borders and ports soon after the Hezbollah resolution is considered. So essentially what we have going on over there in the Middle East is that these idiots who are running our country, these idiots are now attempting to try to push their troops and war into Syria, who has remained on the sidelines with this. And now let's draw them in. Oh yeah, let's draw in Syria. These guys, Bush wants Syria so bad he can't stand it. He wants to invade Syria and then Iran. And I think that he thinks that the only way, Hezbollah, we got to get Hezbollah. That's the only way he thinks he's going to be able to do it, is to try to get Hezbollah. And we got to cut off the ports, because the ports, that's where all the bombs come through, is the ports. Okay, I'll move away from that now. Moving on to some more Republican chicanery. As it continues forward, as a part of their ongoing challenge of the signatures gathered for Green Senate candidate Carl Romanelli, the Pennsylvania Democrats are analyzing them for fraud, and William J. Rise, a forensic document examiner working for the Democrats, has found that a petition signed by John Michael Glick, a Santorum staffer, has four questionable signatures. The signatures belong to family members of another fellow staffer, Julianne George, Rick Santorum's deputy director of coalitions. The writing expert's findings, apparently Pennsylvania Democratic Party Chairman T.J. Rooney said, quote, the writing expert's findings raise serious questions not only about the illegal financing of the petition drive paid for by Santorum backers, but how he authorizes the use of campaign staff for apparent fraud. Democrats say that more than 69,000 of the approximately 100,000 signatures gathered by Santorum staffers and JSM, Inc., a private company hired by the Greens with Republican money, are fraudulent. I have no problem with the Green Party at all whatsoever. I think it would be fantastic if we had many more political parties in this country, and you and I could pick and choose where we believe we fit. However, to use the I'm surprised the Greens are allowing themselves to be used by the Republicans in a slurring way to try to keep a Democrat from winning. What does that tell you about the Green Party in Pennsylvania, folks? I think it tells me volumes. Speaks volumes. Anyway, now. another story of political chicanery where this president is moving forward and forgetting that, you know, he's supposed to uphold and protect the Constitution and the separation of church and state. The resident decider, Bush, on Monday signed a bill designed to save the cross atop Mount Soledad in San Diego from being removed. But both sides in the 17-year court battle predicted more politicking and litigating before the fate of the cross is finally decided. Bush signed a bill sponsored by Representative Duncan Hunter, designates the 43-foot cross and city land beneath it as a federal war memorial under control of the Department of Defense. A federal judge in May declared the cross a violation of the constitutional separation of church and state and ordered it removed by August 2nd. That order was stayed last month by the U.S. Supreme Court until all other legal issues can be resolved. The proponents believe that shifting ownership of the land to the federal government will invalidate the judge's ruling and make it more difficult for opponents to prevail because the U.S. Constitution is more flexible about religious icons on federal property than the state constitution is about city land. Duncan Hunter said soon after the closed Oval Office ceremony, "We've gone from a sure victory for the opponents to what is now a long shot for them." But San Diego attorney James McElroy, who has represented an atheist Vietnam veteran in the long fight to have the cross removed, said the shift in ownership will not matter. McElroy said several decisions in other cases involving crosses on federal land support his position. He is quoted as saying, "The cross on Mount Soledad shows a preference for Christian veterans over non-Christian veterans who have fought and died for their country, and that is wrong." Anticipating that Bush would sign the bill, McElroy filed a request with federal court in San Diego to declare that switching ownership does not change a previous ruling that the presence of the cross on public land is unconstitutional under the state constitution. And so it goes. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll go back over to the phones. If you're on hold, stick around. This is the Bruce Birch Radio Program on the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
Did you hear them talking about it on the radio? Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did they? It all before. It's like deja vu all over again.
Day by day. Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI, It was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online. And even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL. Whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms. And unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program for the final segment of the hour. We've got 10 minutes left on the show. Let's head back over to our good friend, I believe Jim, wanted to come back and give another comment today. Jim, what's up?
Oh, hey, Bruce. Listen, you know, I hope I spoke to the listeners earlier on your program, and I was just calling the shots the way I saw them in light of what you were saying earlier. And, you know, I don't think that anything I said was that outrageous because it's being very practical. And it's a matter of just practicality as opposed to what, you know, some people might consider to be harsh. But nonetheless, I've always had to look at the world in that vein. But as far as the issue of the cross is concerned, Bruce, what are they going to do? Try to remove crosses from federal military cemeteries? I mean, have you been to Arlington or have you ever been to some of the cemeteries overseas?
Mm-hmm,
they're just
sure.
Gardens of stone. And they have Stars of David and things of that nature. The point of my comment is this, and I want to get off here because I have respect for you and your program and your time. We have more to worry about than stuff like this. And there are things much worthy of our time than to be splitting needles, splitting hairs, and trying to see how many angels we have on the head of the pen about a religious symbol. I think we really have much more important things to concern ourselves with. I really do.
Okay.
I, for one, do not shy away from the cross like vampires, okay? It's a beautiful symbol to me.
And
it means a great deal to me. And I'm not ashamed to have it. I have one on my front door, and I have it in my home. I'm not ashamed of my Lord.
As well you shouldn't be. I think that's your religious preference, and, you know, and if you believe in that, then absolutely be proud of it.
And I certainly would not denigrate anyone else's crescent or Star of David or whatever. But I think we really have much more worthy concern than to be getting a case of the fantods about the presence of the cross.
Well, I was reporting the story, so it's basically.
I know you were. But I think that we have much more pressing issues that would make us much better stewards of our time than to get all upset about this the way some people apparently are. Some people, Bruce, just hate Christianity, and they hate signs of it, and I don't know why. And I really am very sad because of that. That makes me very sad. Because to me, these people would be intolerant of other religions as well. Some people just hate religion in general, and they have a problem with it.
Well, I'm getting some comments out of the chat room. A couple of them are, number one person says the cross shouldn't be on public property. And another person is saying that they're ashamed of the church and its idea of gospel. So I don't know.
That's their prerogative to have those opinions. And I, for one, do not agree with them.
Okay.
And that's just my position. And I can't, but I still think that we have much worthier things to devote our attentions to than the absence or presence of religious symbols. I mean, would it make them happier if there were a crescent there or a Star of David? Or a symbol of the Buddha, or some other type of faith. I don't know.
I personally, I think it. You know, there's a difference between Arlington National Cemetery and a singular cross as an honor to veterans, because many, many veterans aren't religious or have no or a different faith or something. I think that's more of a divisive kind of way to honor them. Maybe.
Well,
you know,
let me say this to you, and I'll say this with your kind permission. Just one more sentence.
Sure.
I have never seen an atheist or an agnostic in a hospital bed or a foxhole. And on that note, I'm going to leave you, good buddy. I love you.
Okay. All right, man. Have a great afternoon. That was Jim back to let us know how he felt about the cross story that I just covered. It's cliche day on the horn. Oh my goodness, we're gonna get out of here in just a couple seconds, and our good friend Bob Kincaid is gonna join us today, not gonna join us. He's gonna have his own show here in a few minutes, and. Anyway, so we're, you know, I just let's talk about the grassroots for just a second. The biggest topic of the show, just to do a quick recap, the biggest topic of the show was sort of how we feel about government and what the role of government is. And, you know, I got to tell you, in my view, the role of government absolutely is all about trying to, look out for the general welfare of the people, trying to envision a positive change, and trying to be there to serve the interest of the people. You know? And if we don't have a government that does that, then I think we need to change it. I think we need to change it, because if it becomes more about the interests of the few rather than the interests of the many, it's no longer a government that serves the people. Last but not least, let me do the credits. Glad to have you back with me again this afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow for some more interesting conversation radio that might get a little controversial every now and then. That's okay. That's a good thing. I'd like to thank my good friend Zach Rebich for producing the radio program today. Thank you, Zach, for doing such a wonderful job. I'd also like to thank our good friend Gene, the Head On Radio Headlines blogger, Gene from Oregon. Thank you very much for everything that you do, Mr. News Ninja. Also want to thank our good friend John Fox for being the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network and for being the announcer of my radio show. Moving right along, I want to thank our good friend Ben Birch at White Rose Society for everything that he does to help us in our endeavor over at whiterosesociety.org. If you can spare it, shoot him a donation. He could use it. I want to thank the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights for all that they do, for sponsoring this show and all the other shows on the Head On Radio Network. Thank you guys for your amazing contributions. Also want to thank the Head On Radio Network chat room mods. You guys are the cat herders of the world. Thank you.